Star Walker Studios presents Star Citizens United, a podcast dedicated to making the most of the future hit PC video game, Star Citizen. Greetings, citizen, and welcome to episode 3 of the Star Citizens United podcast. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. Today, I will talk about the government and military of the United Empire of Earth. Greetings, listener. Welcome back to the show. Welcome to episode 3. So glad you join me again. I first want to apologize if my voice sounds a little weird today. I've been fighting a virus for about a week now, and it seems I'm starting to lose the battle. Try to get through this. Today, I wanted to talk about the structure of the government and the military of the UEE, or the United Empire of Earth. This is kind of a continuation of my discussion of the timeline of the game in episode 1. So as a source for this discussion today, I am using a page on the Robert Space Industries website, the first part of their writer's guide. And if you're unfamiliar with the writer's guide, there's a lot of really interesting information in there. And basically what this is the folks at CIG kind of crowdsourcing ideas for the lore of Star Citizen. So every week, I think they do this on a weekly basis, they present a topic for discussion, and you can go in there and throw out ideas and discuss an aspect of the universe of Star Citizen to kind of help them nail down some of the lore. So this comes from the first of these, which is all about the UEE, or the United Empire of Earth. And I'm not going to go through all of this. There's a lot of information here. But some of the interesting things contained in this article is explaining kind of the structure and makeup of the government and the military, and especially for us during our Squadron 42 campaign, you know, the structure of the military is going to be something that will be very relevant. So I will have this actual page linked in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com so that you can go to the source of this and read more about this stuff if you're interested in hearing more. So this was written in 2013. So when they refer to present time, they're talking about 2013. The next 900 years were a bumpy road for humanity. Technological achievements and breathless expansion met with the darkness of a despot. Here is the unvarnished timeline, bridging now 2013 to 2942. And again, I went over that timeline in episode 1 of this podcast. The original intent of this timeline was to model humanity's future society to the waning days of the Roman Empire, specifically that area where its resources were stretched too thin and a break was inevitable. So that's kind of where we're at in the current time of the Star Citizen universe. When we start playing the game, we're in this time that's kind of analogous to this period in the decline of the Roman Empire, where, you know, everything's stretched too thin and the collapse is kind of on the horizon, but hasn't happened yet. So, of course, this is a very exciting and interesting time to be able to play with. It was also important to avoid a moral clarity. We weren't trying to build the empire from Star Wars. This wasn't meant to be a civilization that we wanted everyone to cheer for its demise. Ideally, reactions would be divided. And I think this is a really good move for Star Citizen. I personally have often criticized the kind of simplistic morality in Star Wars, how it's very much, you know, the Empire is bad, the Rebellion is good, you know, everything's black and white. And I'm really happy to see that CIG is going to try to take a more realistic point of view in Star Citizen and leave it up to you, listener, and every other player of the game to decide for yourself what you think. You know, is the UEE a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is its fall a good thing? Is it a bad thing? And ideally, you know, it's not either or, right? It's more complicated than that. There are aspects of the Empire that are good and, you know, we'd like to see that continue. And there are aspects that are not good and we'd like to see change. So there's a great image on this page that I'll embed in the show notes that kind of diagrams the structure of the government. So basically at top, you have the Imperator, which is basically the emperor, right? They call it an Imperator, who is the head of the empire. So counseled by the High Secretary and High Advocate, the Imperator is the figurehead of the government, now bound to a single 10-year term limit. So again, I mentioned this in episode one when I talked about the timeline, but there was a time where the Imperator was kind of all powerful, and I think it was Mesmer the something or other, I forget what the number was after his name, but he was this despot that very much abused this power. And so the government was changed to where there's more of this kind of checks and balances, and the Imperator is more of a figurehead. So we then have the advocacy, and the High Advocate and successive departments handle the legal and law enforcement duties of the Empire. Formed in 2523, when the United Nations of Earth transformed into the United Planets of Earth, or UPE, the advocacy was designed to be an inter-system police force under the High Advocate. During the fascist Messer era, the advocacy took on a darker role as the Imperator's secret police, intelligence, and espionage agency. The extent of their actions are still unknown, but advocacy officials at the time were implicated in high-profile assassinations, the apprehension and torture of non-compliant elements in the populace, and propaganda mongers. When the Imperator fell, they were reconstituted to their original purpose. While most planets were expected to police themselves, the advocacy handled crimes that crossed planets and systems, fugitives and even extra-jurisdictional extractions, pursuit into Banu or Chion territory. Advocacy agents are generally feared among the criminal community. They are well trained in pursuit and apprehension techniques, equal parts hotshot pilot and thorough investigator. Most advocacy agents operate alone, but teams of them can be dispatched for high profile targets or situations of implied violence. The real danger of the advocacy agent is what they represent. A criminal could kill a cop and could probably kill an agent under good circumstances, but they will just send another and another until they ghost him. While the advocacy does handle fugitives, they have been known to outsource to the Bounty Hunter Guild. The advocacy is one of the kind of the three branches of the government under the figurehead of the Imperator. The second of those three branches is the military. Technically, the Imperator is still the High General from when Messer ascended. The military is broken up into three divisions, the Navy, the Army, and the Marines. So we'll start out with the Army. If the Navy are the guardian angels and the Marines are the swords of righteousness, the UEE Army is the mortar that holds the civilization together. An ultra-mechanized ground force, the Army is responsible for land-based military operations and keeps a watchful eye over primitive species on developing worlds. While it doesn't have the numbers of the Navy, the UEE Army is the oldest established branch of the military, founded in 2380 as part of the creation of the United Nations of Earth. The second part of the military is the Marines. These are the first responders and the shock troops. The howl of their drop pods, nicknamed Nails, screaming through the atmosphere is singularly unique and terrifying sound. There isn't a combat zone hot enough to scare off a battle-hardened Marine. the Marines were initially kept under the umbrella of the Army's command structure. They weren't officially separated and formed as their own division until the end of the First Tavaran War. The UPE felt that they needed a consolidated special operations force that commanded the best of both the Army and the Navy. Their focus and primary application became planetary invasion. Marine units are specialized to be weapons of warfare, nothing more. They don't handle diplomatic escorts or pull guard duty, they dust things. When the Imperator doesn't need them, the Marines sequester themselves to their planet bases on Corrin in the Killian system and train for the next conflict that will require their services. Marine candidates are selected from the general pool of Army and Navy recruits. The criterion for selection is unknown and inconsistent at best. Some speculate it is intentional to cement the fact that you don't apply to be a Marine. And next, of course, we have the Navy, which is the largest branch and the public face of the UEE military. The Navy is responsible for transportation of military resources, maintaining the borders, and waging military strikes throughout the UEE. Service members of the Navy are deployed in nearly every system of the Empire. In the early days of humanity's expansion into space, the Unified Navy primarily served as a police force, patrolling the systems for damaged or broken down ships. Upon the discovery of the Banu, the government realized that the Navy needed to be repurposed as a military presence. The Navy's fleet began to swell as it was the most obvious visual representation of humanity's military strength. Fueled by the never-ending stream of stories and vids of daring pilots, recruits flocked to the Navy stations to sign up. Even before the draft of the First Tavaran War, the Navy's enlistment numbers had barely dipped. During the Messer era, the Navy, along with the rest of the UEE military, grew at an exponential rate, helping in the Imperator's mad dash for planets and systems. Structurally, the UEE Navy is formed around squadrons which are assigned to a carrier and a fluctuating number of support ships. An admiral is in charge of the carrier and squadron, with wing commanders running multiple wings that operate at any given time. Recruits train in the shadows of the massive shipyards at the academies and boot camps on MacArthur in the Killian systems. And then finally, the third branch of the government is the legislative branch. In short, the High Secretary Senate branch deals with the infrastructure. They are the wing that houses all the departments, committees, etc. The Senate is comprised of senators. Moving on. This website's kind of funny sometimes. So there are a lot of systems under UEE control. Each system is comprised of a handful of planets. Some are terraformed for settling, some for resources, and some are useless rocks. When a planet reaches a certain population size or ascends to a certain level of influence, for instance, provides a unique and valuable ore, it can petition for recognition by the government, kind of like achieving statehood. If successful, the planet is allowed to elect a citizen to act as their representative in the Senate on Earth. This senator serves for 5 years and can serve multiple terms. Only the largest and most influential planets have multiple senators, Earth having the most at 5. And now we have a list of the current civilizations in the universe, or in the galaxy, I should say, and their diplomatic status with the UEE. So first we have the Banu Protectorate, who was the first alien civilization contacted by Earth. The Banu are generally pretty disorganized. Each of their planets is an independent world with its own specific type of government, which makes mass interaction a little difficult, but probably saved us from antagonizing the whole species during the Messer era. They just kept out of it. We have occasional border disputes with the Banu, mainly because our criminal element flees across the border and the Banu won't look, much less try to catch them for extradition. The Banu's primary business is trade. It saturates their society. Everything comes at a price. Everything can be bought. The Xi'an Empire, formerly hostile but friendlier now, the UEE has made great strides to try and reconnect with the Xi'an after the tension of the Messer era, comparable to the United States Cold War with the Soviet Union. As such, the UEE endorses healthy trade across the borders, but old habits die hard. While the UEE is diplomatically friendly, the Xi'an are a heavily armed and organized civilization with long lifespans. We aren't going to abandon our defenses. And then we have the Vanduul. This is written a little awkwardly. Humanity's entire relationship with the Vanduul has been mired in blood. They have never attempted to contact the UEE in any capacity. The Vanduul themselves are nomadic, with fierce infighting between the various enclaves, so there isn't a consolidated government to make peace or war with. Every so often, a senator or diplomat will attempt to reach out to the Vanduul. If they're lucky, they can't find any of them. Most politicians just regard the entire Vanduul species as a violent act of nature. They're just a certainty like death and taxes, an ugly reality of space. And then we have the Kerthak. I'm not sure if that's how you say that. Their existence was only discovered recently. The closest Kerthak-controlled system lies on the edge of, on the other side of the Xi'an Empire. We know very little about them. The Xi'an weren't keen to share, as the two civilizations have unresolved tension, spawning from a multi-century conflict called the Spirit Wars. The government has not made formal contact with the Kerthak, as they are afraid it will unsettle relationships with the Xi'an. That being said, there are undoubtedly plans of a more covert nature being tossed around, but nothing has been attempted as the Xi'an guard their borders with the Kerthak with ruthless efficiency. So there we go. That's the highlights of this article on the government of the UEE. Pretty interesting stuff. And like I said, I'm just kind of hitting the highlights there. There is more information on the site, which you can find a link to in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. So there's quite a few more of these writer's guides out there. Some of them are more interesting than others. My thoughts right now is I will kind of go through them and find the kind of the cream of the crop for you and give you the highlights in my attempts to cover the lore of the game. I've been digging on the Robert Space Industries website trying to find, you know, what lore that there is that I can share with you, because I've heard from a few listeners that they're interested in this stuff, and I know I am. I want to learn as much of this as I can before the game launches. So I found a time capsule, the time capsules, which I covered in the kind of the timeline I put together in episode one. And then there are these writer's guides. And that's pretty much what I've found as far as lore. So if you know of a good source of lore on the site other than those that I haven't found, please let me know. You can email me at scupodcast@gmail.com. So yeah, I'd love to know if there's any other good sources of information. And I should also point out that these writer's guides, this is an ongoing process of creating the lore of Star Citizen. So all of this stuff I'm talking about is subject to change. And so, you know, take it all with a grain of salt. And this is an ongoing conversation and creation process within CIG and with these writer's guides and this kind of crowdsourcing for lore. So these things may change or may evolve over time. So, you know, if you're listening to this podcast sometime in the future, you know, don't take it to the bank until you get through all the episodes and get to the more current stuff, because, you know, with the launch of the game, some of this stuff may be different. We'll have to see. Well, that's going to wrap up episode 3 of Star Citizens United. Next week, I will find another topic in the lore to talk about. If you would like to reach me, feel free to email me at scupodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what you think of the show. If you have any questions or you have any suggestions of things I could talk about, whether related to the lore of Star Citizen or anything at all relevant to Star Citizen, it's all up for grabs. You can also find me on Google+. Just look for Lex Starwalker. I'm very active on Google+. That's a great place to to talk to me if you use Google Plus. You can also follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker, and please visit the website at starwalkerstudios.com. There you can find all kinds of helpful links in the show notes, and you can also find our other podcasts. If you enjoy Star Citizens United, I'd really appreciate it if you would help support the show. A great way that you can do so if you use iTunes is to head on over to iTunes and please give us a rating and or review on iTunes. I'd really, really appreciate it, and that would help us out a lot. And again, as I said, Star Walker Studios puts out a few podcasts. The other podcast that we're putting out right now is Age of Gaming, which is a kind of general video game podcast about mainly console games and PC games that are either current or coming out soon. I kind of vary the format a little bit. Some episodes I will talk about a specific game, and then other episodes I will go less in depth about a few different games, but I have a lot of fun with that show, so check that out. I also have a podcast that I do with my wife Nikki called Beer Tasters, and that show is dedicated to the enjoyment of delicious beers, and every week we talk about a couple different beers in detail. So if you are interested in craft beer or home brewing, or you'd like to learn more about it, or you're just curious, that's a great podcast to check out. And I also have a podcast called GM Intrusions that is all about tabletop role-playing games, specifically focused on Cypher System games. So once again, I want to thank you for downloading and listening to Star Citizens United. We will be back again next week with another episode. I am Lex Starwalker, and I will see you out there. This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts. Please see all that Starwalker Studios has to offer at starwalkerstudios.com. Thank you.